Hello, I'm Tara. We are discussing service management, various elements of it, and at the end of the day, why are companies or products or service providers even going through the whole business of design, innovation, etc., and offering a product or service? Because at the end of the day, revenue and profitability. And a very integral part of that is pricing strategy. So keep in mind that there is a difference between price and cost. Cost is what is the cost which goes into producing all the elements, the raw material, the services, everything that has gone into producing the final product or service. And cost has to be recovered from the customer. However, a lot of the effort is not happening only for cost recovery because that would only amount to break even, unless it's a not for profit or unless there is some subsidy involved, which is a different thing. But from a commercial business venture point of view, the idea is to have generate a revenue over and above cost so that even after all your costs, your other expenses, your interests, your taxation, all of that comes out, you are left with a profit. So at the end of the day, it's about profitability, it's about your earnings per share, it is about your generating value for your shareholders, whether you're a private or a publicly listed company. So this is where pricing strategy comes in. And there is no formula that cost is 100 and pricing, an effective pricing in this industry is 20% markup, in this industry is 10% markup. There is no standard formula. Every entity has its own pricing strategy. In an industry, there will be certain general trends and benchmark. You can't completely outprice and, you can't completely be an outlier and not follow those trends because those trends are based on certain customer requirements, on certain business motivations. But barring being in sync with those general trends and regulations and, what have you, barring those, it's an individual strategy by brands, by companies, by service providers. So these can vary, and the different cases that we'll be looking at, you will see how what were the different motivations in terms of getting customers to be willing to pay that price, and still be very, very satisfied and not feel cheated. So the different kinds of, there are lots of strategies. There's no one, two, three strategies. There are multiple strategies, and we are going to be seeing so many of those and what typical cases on how those strategies were adopted. So for example, there is value-based strategy. There is cost plus strategy. There is a price skimming strategy. There is competitive pricing, psychological pricing, geographical pricing. There is high low pricing. There is premium pricing. There is premium pricing. And this is just to name a few. There is subscription-based pricing. There is tier-based pricing. And this is just to name a few of the pricing strategies which are used. So a company is can use a single pricing strategy, or it can use a combination of different pricing strategies. Also, within its own product basket or service basket, there could be a core product, and then there could be an augmented product or service. And different strategies or a combination of different strategies could be used for those individual for those various price varying pricing strategies or final pricing on different levels of products or different units of products. And also pricing could be different for a different segment of customers, different geographical regions, and for various other considerations. So let's look at some of the very typical pricing phenomena that we confront as consumers in the market. So first of all, your price is not the cost. As I've said, cost is cost of production. Price is what your customer is willing to pay. You can quote anything, but is he willing to pay? And price is what is he is happily willing to pay based on his perception of what is the value I'm getting for from this? What is the cost benefit there? Is it worth it to me? So, for example, when some people go bargain hunting, or some people do what is called haggling. You know, there are certain tourists want to haggle, and tourists want to, they're told a certain price, they want to bring it down and haggle there, and then eventually pay a price which they are willing to pay. But other than, these haggling markets, which you go to, where, for example, Fashion Street in Mumbai, where it is generally believed that you can buy fashion, clothing and apparel and haggle, what they quote to you, it's expected what you that you haggle. Or for that matter, when you go to a Grand Bazaar in Istanbul or a Spice Bazaar in Istanbul or, some shopping flea market in Europe, is generally expected that a certain price will be quoted to you, and, you will haggle with the vendor, and you will, they will be bringing it up and down. And Indians are actually infamous for that, for haggling too much. And in fact, which is why a lot of the vendors in a lot of the countries say, we don't want to sell to Indian consumers. We are happy with Japanese consumers. We are happy with European, American consumers, because they don't get into this business of haggling. Because Indian mentality is, oh, you are quoting 1,000, you're quoting 50 euro to me for this, but the cost of this is 5 euro. How can you quote a 45 euro markup? But from a vendor's point, you don't bother about the cost, what it costs to get it. Okay? Are you willing? My quotation is 50 euro. Are you willing to pay it or not? You want this. You go produce it yourself if you think you can produce it for 5 euros and acquire it. If you're coming to me, you want me to part with this product, you please come and agree on a price which you are willing to pay, and don't get preoccupied with how much it cost me to get it. Likewise, when you go to a restaurant to pay, let's say you order a dish, you are not actually paying the cost of those, you're not paying the equal of the cost of acquiring those ingredients and the oils and putting it together. You are paying what you are willing, you're paying a price what you are willing to pay. So when it comes to price, it is not just a mirror reflection of the cost. Yes, there are trends, industries, companies, services where you cannot have there is an expectation in terms of what sort of markup you can have, but by the price is by no way a mirror reflection of the cost. So it is the price that a customer is willing to pay for the acquisition of this product or and service, and also what he perceives as the value he will get from it, not just now, but maybe even over a period of time, depending what the product or service is. So let's continue with this and look at some of the kinds of pricings. So when we talk about value pricing, so value is what I think the worth of this, a certain item or services. So for example, you have an apartment which is in South Mumbai, which is in a part of Mumbai which is very popular. Now the construction cost of that apartment, adjusted for inflation whenever you constructed it or whenever you bought it from the builder, may be 1 crore or 50 lakhs based on the brick, mortar, wiring, land, everything that has gone into this apartment building and your flat. But you may be putting it up for sale for 5 crores, 10 crores, because that is the value of that real estate market. That is the value of living in elite South Mumbai, with the South Mumbai locations, having your sea view and what have you. And the value is what is the perceived worth to the customer. I want to stay in South Mumbai, or I want to stay on the seafront in Bandra. I am willing to pay 60,000, 7,000 rupees per square feet for that. And there is absolutely no connection to what the land and brick and mortar cost of this may be, but it is worth it to me to spend that much and pay that. So when we come to value pricing, some of the examples of value pricing are your luxury brands, which have absolutely no connection to the cost of the product being created. Now, for example, a Gucci, for example, a lot of your watch, high-end watch brands, Omega, Rolex, Tag, why are they charging the price that they are charging and customers willing to pay that? Because there is an exclusivity associated with it. There, you, if you wear it, it's an extension of your personality where you are conveying, I am financially very well off. I'm a cut above the rest. I don't wear Titan brand or I don't wear Citizen brand of watches, which are more mass consumer market. So I wear watches which are worth a couple of lakhs, which have limited edition. So there are only so many people in the world wearing these. And that sets me apart from the others. What, how much money has cost has gone into the various parts put together to put this watch together, to bring it to the outlet, to service me, is a different matter. I'm not getting into that. I'm not sitting and calculating that. The price is something which has value for me. It's worth it for me. I am willing to pay that. So this is where a lot of your, for value pricing, is where a lot of your luxury brands come in, where it is a matter of pride, where it is a matter of exclusivity, where it is a matter of rarity, where it is a matter of I have so much money that I don't have to do the cost benefit, cost value pricing analysis. So this is one of the examples of your value based pricing, where a lot of the luxury brands would feature in there. Now, then you have other forms. Of course, when it comes to purely the cost of creating, you could have your fixed cost and you have your variable cost. So, for example, fixed cost is the cost of the parts that are going, the physical parts which are going into your production. It is the fixed cost you have to pay, fixed salaries you have to pay to your employees every year. Whether you are producing 10 units, whether you are producing 100 units, this fixed cost stays standard. I have a rental office. Whether there is a shutdown because of COVID, whether I am producing 10 units, whether I am producing 1,000 units, I have to pay the monthly rent. That is my fixed cost. Whether I have my, I have to pay my salaries to my employees. So these are your fixed costs, which are not connected to your production numbers. Okay. And then you have your variable cost, which is your raw material cost, like the parts which are going into, you know, the raw materials which are going, the fuel which is going into your production, which is linked to the number of production. So raw material, not fixed, raw material and parts is your variable cost, and also cost, for example, labor. Now, in peak season, I may be hiring more staff, more labor, and this cost will vary from season to season, from cycle to cycle. So cost which is linked to your output numbers is your variable cost. So anyway, coming back to your different kinds of costing, different kind of pricing, we have discussed value pricing. Now let's come to another kind of pricing strategy, which is your competitive pricing strategy. So in competitive pricing strategy, not only are you taking into account what your cost is, how much of a markup, a margin goal you have, how much of a profitability target you have, but also in terms of what is my competition offering. Because if I make my price way higher than the competition, then I will lose them to competitors. If I make my price way lower than the competitors, people may not associate good quality with me. So I have to offer a price which is in sync with my competitors. So one of the examples there is, for example, the online booking site booking.com, where you can go and book hotels across the world for your travel. Now, a lot of these sites like booking.com and various, you have Expedia, you have various other platforms. When you go there, a lot of them have a policy of price match. So let's say that a hotel room is costing you 10,000 rupees a night in XYZ country when you come to my site. And if you find the same listing for that same date for the same category of room elsewhere at a better price, we will match the price for you because we don't want to lose you as a customer. So competitive pricing is when, you know, you are trying to stay in sync with what your competitors are, or maybe better a little bit so that you get capture the customer versus someone else. Because quite frankly, as long as the site is reliable, as long as the site is legitimate and popular, I will look for the best price possible, right? So why should a site lose me? Hence, they offer, in the interest of competitive pricing, they offer a price match option. Now, there is a cost plus pricing also, which adds a certain margin. It has its margin targets and it adds a certain margin. And typically for very high, you know, for your everyday materials like toothpaste, for soaps, which are mass produced, high volume, everyday routine purchases, which are not seasonal, which are day to day. Typically, you will have a cost plus pricing here. I have my, toothpaste where I, you know, whatever the cost, typically, you know, the industry may be charging a markup of 15 to 20. Again, you will, find that the prices will not be extremely volatile here either in the short term or in the long term. Of course, there will be a natural progression. So this is your cost plus pricing where there is, which is mass produced, large numbers, very easily available at multiple contact points, multiple purchase points, and something I buy in routine on a very regular basis. Another kind of the pricing strategy is, for example, Netflix, the subscription-based pricing. Now, when Netflix got into building this pricing strategy, initially, they offered their subscription at a very low price. Then they increased the prices. Now, this is a clear example of penetrative pricing. So, to find inroads and to penetrate a market and to have a large customer base, you first offer free or discounted pricing. Once you have got the customer loyalty, you are quite sure that you will manage to retain the customer despite increasing prices, then you go in for this penetrative pricing. So one of the examples as I'm giving you is Netflix. And even not only did they raise prices once they had a higher captive subscriber base, and now they have, more than 300 million paid subscribers globally. So they also have a different level of subscription. Within that, they have a basic plan, they have a standard plan, they have a premium plan. And likewise, even when you go on other platforms like Amazon Prime or Hulu or Hotstar, you will have different levels of pricing. Even for that matter, MX Player, which now I think has merged with another platform. But even MX Player initially had a free segment, had a free membership in which you had to see ads because they have to make the money through advertising, right? So you had a free membership where ads came, and then you had a premium membership which was ads free. So all of these elements have to be taken into account, and obviously for building the pricing strategies, companies have to look at what is my competitor pricing. Now first movers like Netflix don't have a comparative in terms of a competitor pricing model where they can analyze that. So you have to see what is the demand here? What is the market perception? You have to have test markets. You have to be very tuned into customer feedback. They must have done a lot of testing to see whether they can raise prices and still retain their customers. So penetrative pricing is one of these strategies which is used. Now, in penetrative pricing, as your Netflix used, After that, they also have used a lot of algorithms to make personalized suggestions, all of those, so that they have given a perceived value to the customer based on which he has decided, should I go for the premium, which allows me higher definition on so many screens, or should I go to for standard, which is which is offering me this limitation. So a lot of this is then they are using your subscription, your activity levels, your patterns, to using a lot of algorithms, models to incorporate in their customer service, and also analyzing a lot of data to create this pricing strategy and arrive at their pricing. Now, you also have, now clearly in the case of Netflix, their strategy, despite becoming, being made more expensive after achieving their penetration targets and having a first mover advantage and a captive audience, despite all the competition which is there, their last revenue they clocked was over $40 billion. So clearly, despite raising prices, they have not lost customers. They have paid customers of more than 300 million the world over. Their mobile app itself, has been downloaded more than 100 million times from various, platforms, Google Play or whatever else. And so hence, despite the raising prices does not always amount to losing the customer. Raising prices has still worked for them, and they are continuing to generate these phenomenal revenues. So that is how your penetrative pricing works. Then you have another strategy, which is your skimming, price skimming. So what happens in price skimming is that you initially launch with a very high price, and you have a smaller segment probably of customers who are willing to pay that high price and want to have that initial purchaser experience and perception, and want to be the first few to have access. So for example, Tesla's cars, Elon Musk's company, Tesla has used a price skimming approach. So some of their models of their smart cars are initially launched at very high prices. And once that perception has been created, the people who wanted to have it before everyone else, then they gradually introduce other layers and other possibly lower layers of pricing, and supply it in larger numbers versus the initial few who got it. So it is for people who want to get in early, want to be the first ones to acquire it, and they're probably like talking about it to the whole world, who were the first few people to get it. You know, when new cars are launched, then you'll have a big fanfare, function and launch, and the keys of the car will be handed to the purchaser, and it's such a matter of honor, and matter of privilege of who were the first few to buy it. So this is a typical example of price skimming, which, despite an initial high price, does go and get your customers to endorse and patronize your product. Then we have another kind of pricing, which is your premium pricing. Premium pricing, you can think of premium pricing as also a somewhat subsection of your value pricing, where we were looking at luxury brands. So these may not necessarily be luxury brands, but like an Apple iPhone. So Apple iPhone is whatever the cost of production of that iPhone is. In the hands of the buyer, there is a premium pricing to it. People are very happy and willing to pay this premium pricing. And they want to be the first ones to get it. Now, when an Apple latest version is launched, you see news reports of how long the queue was outside the Apple store, and people came from other cities to buy it, and how many hours they waited in queue, and who were the first few people to acquire it, and then there'll be an interview of the first person who came and acquired it. So this is all premium pricing, where it's a matter of privilege. I am, you know, a cut above the others. For example, in India, maybe it's not that popular, but there is a concept of ethical diamonds internationally. Ethical diamonds are diamonds which are being processed, produced, sourced, processed, being sold, you know. In the entire process, nowhere are they interacting with parties or countries where there is conflict and war. Because in conflict regions and war zones, there is a lot of bloodshed, there is a lot of slave labor, there is a lot of exploitation of children, women, across child labor, a lot of other assaults, underpaid or, you know, bonded laborer kind of situations, really bad conditions of living in the mining industries of those countries. So a lot of people don't want to purchase diamonds which at any time during their chain of reaching, their journey of reaching the purchase point has been through a conflict zone. And they are willing to pay a premium price for diamonds which have come from a non-conflict zone and which throughout their journey from sourcing to the event, reaching the point of purchase, can proudly say that they have not in any way ended up patronizing the war zone and exploitation that happens out there. So now this premium which is being paid for these ethical diamonds is clearly a matter of honor for the people who are buying it. And when they buy it or they gift it, they will mention that, you know, this is, you know, oh, beautiful diamond. Oh, it's from a conflict. It's a conflict-free diamond. See, it has a little logo here which shows that. If you're gifting it, the box, product box will have a little certificate which will say, which will certify that it has come from a conflict-free zone and it is not a blood diamond. So premium pricing is when people want that perception associated with them and are willing to pay that price, higher price, which may not have any connection to the cost of it or simply a standard markup, but want that perception understood either for their own satisfaction or for the visible satisfaction of everyone that we are that exclusive group. We are that exclusive category and we have the ability, the willingness to pay for this premium product or service which we are getting. So for example, if you go to a hotel, you have regular rooms and then you have your sea view rooms and all of that, and then you have your category called club room. Along with the club room comes your access to the lounge and various other facilities and all of those, and accesses and access which is not provided to other categories of guests in the same hotel. So people have no problem paying that premium for that access, exclusive access where others cannot come in. So people want to be part of an exclusive group and not larger groups. This is where your value-based pricing comes in. This is where your premium pricing strategies come in.